Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Should the 49ers trade Brandon Ayuk to the Las Vegas Raiders for Davante Adams? We'll discuss that and more next on 49ers After Dark. What's up, everyone? I'm Grant Cohn, biting everyone's style of the cold open. That's Jesse Naylor, who's been doing that for a while now. Jesse, background's looking good. The entire presentation looking A1 as always. How are you? I like the hat.
I'm doing fantastic. I know it's the 80s style hat. It's like wool. Love that. It's got the leather strap. Yeah, that was a great cold open for the first time. That was very well done.
Thanks.
I've been doing this game, Grant.
My living room for a long time.
Nice. Well played.
Okay, so Pretty Ricky, who is pretty much the foremost newsbreaker on the internet, other than Adam Schefter and the guys at NFL Network. In fact, he might be better because he's got sources.
He's done a better job this.
Can you tell people like what his track record is this offseason, Pretty Ricky?
Phenomenal. First of all, he broke the Goff extension. He broke the Amon-Ra St. Brown extension. He broke the Justin Jefferson extension. Every single draft pick for the first round, he was minutes ahead of everybody else. I mean, he has been spot on all offseason. So when he speaks, kind of got to listen.
Got to. So his latest...
Oh, Trevor Lawrence as well. He broke the Trevor Lawrence...
So he's all over it. Whoever is feeding him information hasn't stopped. And the latest one isn't a report. It's a rumor. So it's interesting. It may not happen, but this seems like something that's been discussed or floated. Brandon Ayuk to the Raiders for Davante Adams. Seems like the most fair proposed trade I've heard for Brandon Ayuk yet. So let's discuss it. Let's talk about why the Niners might want to do it first. Why do you think the 49ers would want to trade Brandon Ayuk for Davante Adams?
Yeah, I think that there's three reasons why they would want to do it. I think, at least for me, I don't think there's really an argument of who's better present day. Davante Adams is a legit, at worst, top six receiver in the NFL. Most people probably still have him top five, and some people might even have him top three. Brandon Ayuk is a borderline top 10 receiver. I personally have him in the top 10, but I can understand if you don't have him in the top 10. Right now, in this moment, Davante Adams is a better player, and for a team that is trying to win a Super Bowl, that makes sense to get better in the present moment. I think also if you move on from BA, yes, you might be foregoing the future of BA, but you are maintaining financial flexibility, because after this year, you don't really owe Davante Adams anything. You can let him go for scot-free, move on. Hopefully, at that time, Davante Adams has helped develop Ricky Pearsall, and he can kind of step in if that's something you decide to do. And I think the last thing is, if we're looking at things from the outside, right now, Brandon Ayuk does seem disgruntled. If you're not planning on paying him, that's probably going to remain throughout the season. Why not get a player out of your locker room that is disgruntled, that can bring down the vibe of everybody else, bring in somebody who's a leader and a veteran and respected in this league? I think for those three reasons, that's why the 49ers would want to do this deal.
Yeah, and it's like, did Brandon Ayuk have a better year than Davante Adams last year? Yeah, but Brandon Ayuk was on the 49ers with Kyle Shanahan and this incredible supporting cast, and Davante Adams with the Raiders, and yet he still scored 8 touchdowns while Ayuk scored 7. Like, Davante Adams is incredible. The year before, when he was in like the Shanahan system with the floor playing with Aaron Rodgers, 1,500 yards and 14 touchdowns. The year before that, 1,500 yards and 11 touchdowns. The year before that, 1,300 yards and 18 touchdowns. Like, oh my God. All first team All-Pro 3 years in a row. Brandon Ayuk's really good, and he may do that in his career, or he may not. We know that Davante Adams isn't a one-year wonder. He's maybe a future Hall of Famer, or as close as it gets to being a future Hall of Famer. I mean, he would make the 49ers better in the short term, which is what they seemingly care about.
Well, and the other thing too, I mean, we talk about top 10 receivers. I think we're going to break it down a little bit later, but two of the guys locked firmly in the top 10 are Amon-Ra St. Brown and Justin Jefferson. And when you watch the receiver show, the amount of respect they have for Davante Adams and how good they think he is still at this age, I mean, that should show you what he brings to the table. He's still an elite wide receiver, even at almost 32 years old.
Yeah, and you put him on in this offense with Christian McCaffrey, Debo Samuel, George Kittle, he would get so many one-on-one matchups that he hasn't gotten in 7 years. He would have a career resurgence like we haven't. He would just produce in a way that Brandon Ayuk, I don't think, could. And if he didn't get one-on-one matchups, then the rest of the offense would be phenomenal. Yeah, if they're going to trade Ayuk, it feels like this is the move to make. And it's like, it wouldn't upset the locker room, I don't think. I mean, would they be upset to have Davante Adams? And Ayuk's from Nevada. Adams is from the Bay. Maybe both of them would be happier with this move.
Yeah, I think that's a possibility. I mean, Davante Adams certainly, you would think, would want to play for a contender. I think that's why you're hearing a lot of the rumors floated around that the Jets are interested and that deal is almost a done deal. I don't know about any of that. Pretty Ricky hasn't said it, so I can't believe it yet. But overall, I mean, you would think Davante Adams wouldn't mind coming here for one season to try to help put this team over the top.
Wouldn't mind. I think it would be a dream come true. I'm sure if you've watched the receiver show, he seems pretty dissatisfied with being on the Raiders. They're rebuilding at best. He's going to be 32 this year. Sure, mm-hmm. If you had him in a private, candid moment, and you said, where would you like to play next year? The Niners would be probably one of the first teams he mentions. He's from here. They're good. They'd feature him. He's played in a similar offense before. It fits. Really. I mean, and if the Raiders are into it, then you got to wonder, like, why wouldn't the Niners want to do this? Should we go there?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's definitely reasons as to why they wouldn't, but I don't know if they should outweigh why they should, if
okay,
it is
fair
an
enough.
Actual possibility. I would say losing Brock's future number one weapon, maybe something that you don't want to do. I mean, you're looking at Brandon Ayuk, who's 26. Seemingly, he would grow with Brock Purdy. They can develop that connection over the years. And in 2 years, I mean, the Kittles, the CMCs, the Debos, they're likely not going to be here. Brandon Ayuk presumably would be the number one weapon at that time. And then I would say the other thing too is, you know, Davante Adams is a hell of a player. I don't know many receivers that are the blocker that BA is, the willing blocker, and just the way that he fits in the system, being able to open things up down the field. I think he fits perfectly with this system. And so, you know, you kind of look at those things and say, yes, Davante is a hell of a player, but how does he fit with this current cast of characters? Maybe you can look at Ayuk and say, as a puzzle piece, might fit a little bit better, even though he's not as good.
Yeah, and we're worried about targets for Ayuk. Have you looked at Davante Adams, what he's used to last year, 175? Year before that, 180. Year before that, 169. I mean, maybe he'll buy in to 115 targets, or maybe not. Maybe he say, yeah, that, maybe he'll say all the right things in August, but then in November when he's not going to make the Pro Bowl and the Niners are, I don't know, who knows? Maybe there's a different body language, tone. Maybe he's not necessarily the leader that you thought he would be. I mean, all of those things could come into play.
Yeah, there were some moments last or on the receiver show from last year where he was disgruntled seemingly for not getting targets, even in a game that they won. But once you kind of watched it a little bit further as the episodes went along, there were games that they did end up winning later on that he wasn't really targeted at all. And his whole point was he just wanted the offense to move the ball. There was a game where he didn't get a lot of targets. The offense wasn't moving the ball well. They happened to win that game, but he was still super frustrated because in his mind, the offense didn't look the way that it should. They weren't moving the ball particularly well. Later on, he kind of cleared that up and was like, listen, I don't care about the targets. I care that the offense is putting up points. If that's without me, I'm totally fine with that. So I don't know that he would be upset about that, but he is used to getting a ton of targets.
Yeah, and it's maybe Kyle wouldn't give it to him. Maybe he would, though. Like, if Kyle really thinks you're that good, he won't get in your way. I think the issue with Brandon is Kyle doesn't think he's that good. Like, he thinks Christian that is that good. He won't get in Christian's way. As many times you want the ball, let me know. You can have it. But with Brandon, it's like, you freaking wait until it's your turn.
Yeah.
You know, so that's one thing. And also, it's like, if the Niners could extend Brandon Ayuk at the price, if they can come together and agree to a 4 or 5 year contract extension, obviously that's the best option because he's 26. That's the best option. But if that's not going to happen and the Niners are like, okay, well, will you let you play on your 5th year option? And then maybe we'll tag you next year. And maybe we could tag and trade you or go year to year. And it's like, well, he's only going to be in the team 1, 2, maybe 3 more years tops. And it's going to be awkward at best. Trading for Davante Adams. Because, I mean, if you're only going to talk about 1 or 2 years of the guy, like, maybe I'd rather have Davante Adams anyway, and he might be more eager to play on this team. That seems like an easy trade. But if they still think they can work it out with Brandon long term, that would have to be the number one move.
Yeah, I would think so. But I will say this, of all the like floated rumor trades that seem to be out there, if I were interested in one the most, I would say this would be it. I mean, the other part of this is I think the Raiders would also give a pick, not a high pick, probably like a 4th rounder with it. And the reason that I say that, yes, Davante Adams is clearly the better player now, but they also know that they're getting Brandon Ayuk long term, and Davante Adams is essentially a 1 year guaranteed rental. Beyond that, there's no guarantees. So you almost would have to give a little something else in return. Not a lot. You're not going to get a 1st, 2nd, probably even a 3rd, but a 4th round pick, something like that. So you will get a little kicker with that, I would imagine.
Got a wild card that we haven't mentioned yet. So clearly you like the long-term prospects of keeping Brandon Ayuk, but the 49ers did just draft a wide receiver in round 1, Ricky Pearsall. Sure. And if Kyle's really confident in him, thinks he's a smooth operator, whatever, thinks he's a future number 1 wide receiver, a high-level number 2, then all the more reason to trade for Davante Adams, because who cares long-term? Ricky Pearsall's the answer long-term. He's the real deal. People just don't understand. Or if they've soured on him a little bit because he's injured already, maybe it's more all the more reason to bring back Brandon Ayuk. Maybe that's why Brandon Ayuk asked for a trade the day that he did. I don't know.
It was interesting timing, to say the least. Extremely. But back to the Pearsall thing, and I mentioned it a little bit earlier, I don't know that there's a better player to help mentor and develop him than Davante Adams, right? Like, who else would you want to develop your young wide receiver and help mentor him? I think Davante Adams would be a pretty good candidate.
And one more thing before we move on. When the Niners drafted Brandon Ayuk, not a lot of people had really heard of him. He'd only been, you know, at Arizona State a couple of years, and they were trying to justify it. And I remember hearing a lot at training camp whispers from people like Tim Ryan and Greg Popp, like, you know, I think Greg Popp even said it on the record, on his radio show, Brandon Ayuk's a lot like Davante Adams. If you had to give him a comp. And at the time it was like, yo, that's kind of lofty praise. Davante Adams, like, the best in the game right now. So If they could get Davante Adams for Brandon Ayuk, I think that's what they always wanted him to be anyway.
They'd go for get it. The actual Davante Adams for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Mike McDaniel just got Odell Beckham. I feel like he'd been pining for Odell for a long time.
Yeah. Probably too little too late on that one. But, you know, it was your third wide receiver. Probably
a little too late. Yeah. I'd say Devontae's got a little bit more left in the tank.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So recently, Brandon Ayuk was ranked the 10th best wide receiver in the league. What do you think of that ranking? Is it fair? Is it foul?
I think it's fair. I mean, there's a couple guys ahead of him that I would move up the board. So we can go one by one. I mean, Justin Jefferson, I think almost unanimously, he's the number one wide receiver in the league. If not, then it's either Hill or Chase. That's the top three right there. No argument. CeeDee Lamb, me personally, I don't have CeeDee Lamb in my top five. I think CeeDee Lamb is very good. I think he's a product of being force-fed the ball on a pretty regular basis. I think if you were to switch CeeDee Lamb and Ayuk, Ayuk could do many of the things that CeeDee Lamb does in that offense, personally. After CeeDee Lamb, they have Davante Adams, A.J. Brown, and Amon-Ra St. Brown. Then it goes to Mike Evans, who's aging, still very, very good. And then Stephon Diggs. I don't know what Stephon Diggs has left. I think Stephon Diggs is good. I also think, you know, it's funny because when people talk about Josh Allen, they say that Stephon Diggs made him. What did he do without Josh Allen? But when you look at Stephon Diggs before Josh Allen, he was never an all-pro player. He had more yards in four seasons than he had the previous five in Minnesota combined. He made two first-team all-pros. I mean, he did a lot of things with Josh Allen, and then seemingly the last half of last year, he really fell off. They didn't feature him at all. They didn't even look his way a lot of those games. Is that because he fell off a little bit? What was going on there? So Ayuk at 10, you know, I think Ayuk's probably top 10-ish, and there's a couple guys in there I would probably put him ahead of personally.
I think if you were asking, was Brandon Ayuk a top 10 wide receiver last season? The answer would be obviously, unquestionably, yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But that's not the question. And if you're asking, is a guy a top 10 player at his position, you got to look beyond just the last season. It's the whole body of work. And with a guy like Davante Adams, you could say he's over the hill, but man, he's been to six Pro Bowls in a row or seven. I mean, he's insane. Brandon Ayuk, as good as you think he is or should be or could be or would have been in certain different circumstances or gonna be, whatever, he's had zero Pro Bowls and one second team All Pro. And it's dangerous to just cement someone like that in a top 10, because let's go back 2 years to the Deebo Samuel experience. His great year was better than Brandon's great year. He was first team All Pro. He was incredible. And a lot of people felt this guy's top five at his position, but here we are now, and look back, it's like, well, nah, he just had one great year. And that doesn't make you... So he's not even in consideration for the top 10 wide receiver in this. That could be Brandon if he never has another season where he averages 17.9 yards per catch. So I feel a little uncomfortable making him just say, absolutely, he's top 10 over Stephon Diggs, who's done it over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. There's definitely a career situation. It's tough to gauge because... with a wide receiver, especially, you've seen Brandon Ayuk. He's been consistently good, right? Last year was by far his best year, but it's not like he's been horrible. No. It looks like he's ascending. And so you have to gauge, is if Diggs is on the way down and Ayuk's on the way up, where's that axis point? Where does that cross? And at what point is Ayuk better? A lot of it is projection for sure. I don't know. Do you have a problem with Ayuk being 10th though on the list? I mean, do you think, is there anybody that was left off this list that you think has to be ahead of him?
I was just thinking that. Can you think of anyone else that didn't make this list who was snubbed? I mean, obviously Deebo, DK.
I'm not a big DK fan. I think he's
what if you put DK in this team? If you gave him the Ayuk's role on this team, I don't know.
I don't think he's the route runner that Ayuk is. I mean, they get it done differently. I think he could be effective.
They get it done differently.
For sure. They get it done differently. You know, Cooper Kupp maybe, but he Puka? Just came off of a year where he was injured. Puka's, I mean, talk about.
But again, that's another one. That 1 year.
Yeah. Debo's another honorable mention on here, but no. Waddle, I guess. Maybe you could talk about Waddle. And then you start getting into a bunch of guys that have a couple decent seasons, but nobody's really ascended, the Alaves and what have you. So, no, I think Ayuk deserves to be top 10. If not, he's just outside of it.
It seems fair to me. There's no one I would rank over him at this point. But Mike Evans, I mean, you could argue that. You could say I'd rather have Ayuk this year than Diggs, Evans, mm-hmm. a lot of those people. But just in terms of who's proven it, he just hasn't yet.
Not for long sure.
Enough. Yeah.
But let's talk about it in this light, though. We agree that he deserves some sort of ranking on this list, right? Mm-hmm. Guys that we don't have on this list, Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, Nico Collins, they just got paid this offseason. And so is Ayuk really asking for way too much? Like, I think that a lot of fans are torn. They're like, oh, just shut up and take the money. But those guys all just got paid, and they're in that range of 26, 28 million. And we agree that he's better than them. So why shouldn't Ayuk be asking what he's asking for?
I think he should be. And I think if the 49ers want to play hardball, there could be some fallout for them. And I guess that's their prerogative. But if Brandon really wants this, then he should not sign an extension. And he should wait and try to get, you know, wait till next year. Because he could be worth even more money next year. Now, I know it's scary. He plays football and he could get injured. But the world is so unfair. And just because he's worth that doesn't mean he's worth that to the Niners, that they absolutely, or that they're wrong if they don't. Like look at what's going on with Cincinnati and T. Higgins.
Yeah.
T. Higgins wants his money. The Bengals are like, sorry, we don't have to give it to you yet. And T. Higgins has to live with that. No one's got a bleeding heart for T. He's not going on the pivot with eight people around him being like, damn, T, you're getting wrong, man. Whatever you want, that's what you deserve. But that's what Brandon Ayuk's doing. So it seems like the Niners are sort of playing the game, and it's a dirty game. We all know that. And if Ayuk wants the most money possible, he's got to be patient.
Yeah, I think, you know, the Bengals situation is interesting because they have two receivers that are eligible to get paid, and one of them we have firmly in the top three. So yep. It's like if you got to choose one, you're going to choose Chase. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't also, that's the thing, is both things really can be true here. Ayuk is not out of bounds asking what he's asking for. He's well within his right based off of where he ranks and what other guys are getting paid. And the 49ers are well within their right in saying, no, you don't carry the same value to us that you would in a vacuum across the league. And we're sorry about that, but we're not willing to pay you. And so I do think both things can be true. I don't know. We'll see.
I do think one thing that's hurting Brandon is, you know, he could say what he wants about targets and whatever and efficiency, but like whenever he's had an opportunity to do anything in the playoffs, he hasn't come through. I mean, he had 9 catches in the playoffs last year. He had 6 catches in the playoffs year before that. And he had 9 catches in the playoffs before that. Like, he's never taken over a playoff game. He had the great catch in the NFC Championship game. That was super duper clutch, but there's a lot left to be desired on his resume, a whole lot.
Yeah, I mean, you look at somebody like Amon-Ra St. Brown, for example. His first playoff game, he catches the game-ending comeback. Like, he's like, "Get me the ball, I'll get the first down, and I'll end this game right here, right now." And that's exactly what he did. So, yeah,
what about Puka Nacua,
I understand that. Yeah, Puka Nacua. I mean, he
9 catches for 181 and a touchdown in his first playoff game. Like, okay, like you're legit. Crushed it.
Yeah, he crushed it.
But I think with Ayuk, there are questions. Like, are you really legit? Or are you a very good wide receiver in a great system with a great supporting cast who gets one-on-ones and yada, yada, yada? And it's like you could make the argument that you would produce at a higher volume, but you haven't. These guys have.
Yeah, but then I guess the flip side is like, well, where the hell is George Kittle in the playoffs? Where the hell is Debo Samuel? I mean, Debo Samuel had a good rookie year in that first playoff run, and he's had some moments like Green Bay, but this year in the Super Bowl, he was nowhere to be found.
True.
NFC Championship, it's not like he took over that game either. So,
nope.
I don't know. Now, I will say, like, in Debo's defense, he has had those takeover moments. Green Bay was phenomenal. Without him, they certainly don't. The 8-yard run when they needed 7 on third down against Green Bay, that was fantastic. So at least
also, he's on Kittle's defense, he's not asking for $30 million a year.
True.
That's the thing with Brandon. It's like, yeah, you're really, 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 really good, dude, but you want $30 million a year, so let's really talk about how good you are.
Yeah. But what if the tight end market was $30 million a year?
Then we'd have to get real brutal with George. I mean, dude, where are you? I mean, your blocking is wonderful, man, but I'll take Travis Kelce's career over yours every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, how much is that George? How much is that Kyle, man? Like, if Travis Kelce retired today and George Kittle got traded to the Chiefs, would he not have the best year of his career right now?
Oh, he would crush it. Yeah, he would absolutely crush it. Yeah.
So, and that's, I guess that's Brandon Ayuk's ad.
That's what I was saying too. Right? Was same thing with Brandon Ayuk. To him.
Yeah.
Like, swap him and CeeDee Lamb.
If you traded him to Buffalo today,
help.
Would he not go for 1,600 yards 3 seasons in a row? I mean, he might.
He'd go crazy.
Yeah. And the Niners probably know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It genuinely is.
They both have a case. It's a very interesting Judge Judy situation. What would Judge Judy say?
Did you ask your dad that question? Doesn't he watch Judge Judy?
I think I would like to know what he thinks Judge Judy would say, because sometimes you never know. Would she really take the team's side on this one? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Dave Barkley says, please trade for Adams.
That'd be nice.
If that trade happened, I don't think one 49er fan would be upset.
No, I don't think so either. I don't think it happens, but it would
no,
be
no, nice. I don't think it happens either. That's why I said it was a rumor.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Aldo Martinez says, B.A. and Elijah Mitchell for D.A. and Michael Mayer. Man, no one wants Elijah Mitchell. I'm sorry. Those days are long gone. Michael McCann says, devil's advocate, he ranked 10th best wide receiver, and he's still the fourth option on a run-heavy offense. He's matching A.J. Brown numbers on 50 less targets. I mean, he did 1 year. That's my thing, though. He did 1 year. Debo did 1 year. You know, now that we've seen 5 years of Debo, no one would call him a top 10 wide receiver. So,
yeah, I also don't think
for Brandon.
I also don't think anybody across the league would take Ayuk over AJ Brown. I think AJ Brown's a top 5 receiver, and he's not 5.
Also, there's something to be said for like a wide receiver who's placed in a position where he has to be the guy. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows you're getting the targets. Everyone knows you're getting the coverage role to you. Can you produce? Ayuk hasn't been in that situation yet.
No, but I did do a little exercise because people were crapping on him yesterday on Twitter. And I said, all right, well, let me look at the 3 games without Debo Samuel. And if those 3 games were a season, he basically puts up the identical numbers. He would have 79 catches instead of 75, and he would have had 1,380 yards instead of 13, whatever he ended up having. So it was basically the same exact season with and without Debo on the field.
That's interesting. It would be interesting to see what happens to the offense when Ayuk's not on the field compared to what happens to the offense when Debo's not on the field. Because from what I understand, the offensive splits with and without Debo are drastic in terms of yards per play. That whatever he does, however defenses react to him and his wide back shenanigans, it's a big deal. Then you look at Ayuk, like, yeah, you're more the traditional wide receiver and you're a great route runner, but like, if you're getting one-on-one matchups and you're out and someone like Ricky Pearsall takes your place, like, is the offense going to just fall off or not? I mean, I don't know the answer to that. They don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we have one game without Ayuk, but it was against the Giants team, which was one of the worst in the league. So who knows what that really tells you? I don't know. It's tough.
It's tough.
And when Kyle Debo, and also real quick, when Debo was out, so was Trent Williams. I mean, who, you know what I mean? Like, who really is the driving factor there?
He like missed a lot of time against the Packers in the playoff game. And the Niners offense struggled. Maybe it was because it was raining and Brock can't throw the ball in the rain. Or maybe it's because Debo's super essential. I don't know. Or maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, they're 5-3 the last 2 seasons without Debo. But 2 of the 3 they lost, Trent Williams also didn't play. And
they're 3-6 when he doesn't play.
Yeah. And Trent Williams also, in the third one that they lost, said that he shouldn't have been on the field. He gutted it out because they had already lost Debo. So,
you know what's crazy? It's like, this team is considered this juggernaut, this generational team, this like, you shouldn't be able to put this collection of talent together with a salary cap. And yet, if that one player goes down, it all falls down like a house of cards. If that one guy misses 8, 10, 12 games, yeah. Good luck.
That's it.
Yeah,
that's it.
No one's going to be talking about how talented this team is, even though it is.
Yeah, because when you look at it, it's like, okay, if Ayuk goes out, you still have Debo, CMC, and Kittle. If any one of them go out, you have three other great pieces. If Trent Williams goes out, you have arguably the worst offensive line in the NFL. So,
yeah, I think that's pretty fair to say. Kyle Levy stands on dumb, says, thanks, Jesse. Kyle Levy doesn't feature anyone but Debo. What about Christian?
Yeah, he features the hell out of Christian.
Dave Barclay says, you think any of this is for off-season attention?
Well, it definitely is. Are you saying from the 49ers side? I don't know about that. Certainly from Ayuk side. I mean, he all but said that, didn't he?
Here's why Ayuk requested his trade. I heard this from multiple sources. He really wanted Jesse and I and me to have content. So he said, let me throw you something.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Man of the people.
Yeah, 17 tracks. Here's two more for you guys. Knee says AJ Brown over Ayuk clearly, but Ayuk doesn't have a big dom. It's just not fair.
Good point. I didn't even consider that. Yeah.
The big dom thing was so interesting last year. He gets in an altercation with the 49ers player, thrown out. My first reaction is, who the hell is that guy? Then it turns out everyone knows who he is and everybody. They respect him.
What?
The things you don't know about the NFL.
The plot twist.
Everyone's like, I really wanted to meet Big Dom. I have so much respect for Big Dom. Like, why? Who does he? What is he? What? How do you? Who is he? Mindful Naked says, doesn't matter who's on the roster. Kyle in the big fight while wielding a sword against a butter knife would pull out a spoon for the fail. I mean, it was really poetic what she wrote, and I can't disagree. It's on him. Because here's the thing. Kyle Shanahan gets called a genius and a top two coach in the league. Everyone agrees his roster is the best. He doesn't win a Super Bowl, and no one's like, does that mean that Kyle's not as good as we think he is? No, it's just bad luck or something. Eventually,
hard to win a Super Bowl, Grant.
It's hard. It's also hard to blow a 10-point lead. He's the only guy who's done it twice. Him. So, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, his legacy is kind of in the balance. He's done everything you can except win a Super Bowl, but it's not like he's just lost him. He's like found ways to lose Super Bowls against inferior teams while he's had juggernauts. Like, that's not what great coaches do, or even good coaches.
Yeah, it's been done, what, 7 times in the Super Bowl and twice by him, once by his dad? Is that?
Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
He didn't have the best team. He's not even a great coach. He figured out a way to not blow it one time.
Against, by the way, and the best quarterback and best head coach prior to what's happening right now. So,
yeah, I don't like how Kyle like floats his little excuse like, well, you know, you're going against a generational quarterback. You held him to 19 points in regulation. That was not the reason you lost. Mahomes didn't Mahomes you. It's like it was you against Steve Spagnuolo and you lost in an incredible fashion. Yeah. You lost so bad you tried to hire him the next day. That's what happened. That's the story that's of that game. Yes, that's crazy. Dave Barclay, the man, the myth, and name changer, Brother Bob. Yeah, Brother Bob, we got to get you back on the show soon, man. Fish and Chips member for 11 months. Thank you very much. Kyle Levy stands on dumb, says, LOL, duh, of course I meant non-gadget running backs. Of course. Fish and Chips says, GC, you got to out the little shanty. You out of the little shanty doghouse after the Super Bowl. I doubt it. I will find out later this week. I asked him a question at minicamp, and he made fun of me for asking it too quickly. Remember that? He was like, oh, you didn't get a chance to finish there.
Yeah. It's like, how'd you know I was done?
You're done. Wrap it up.
I feel, you know, it's interesting because a lot of people really, they get on Twitter and they say they don't like you and all these other things, but anything interesting that comes out of a press conference always centers around a question that you've asked. I would say 9 out of the 10 interesting things center around a question that you asked at the press conference.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Or like, usually what happens is Niner fans hate me in the offseason, hate me in the training camp, but then like they'll lose one game. And then in the Twitter mentions, like, get him, Grant. Get him, Grant. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, now you want me to be, now you like me for who I am. But the other 11 months of the year, you hate me. But it's like, no, Grant, we need Grant for this. I mean, I'm not that. I'm not my dad. I'll do the best I can.
Grant's going to have to ask the tough questions. Thank God he's around.
That one always gets me. Okay, a couple more super chats. Hold on. Chris says, BA for Myers and Jackson Powers Johnson.
I wish. You think, why would the 49ers want Jackson Powers Johnson? They could have drafted him.
How about BA for Brock Bowers and Jackson Powers Johnson?
Oh, God, yard. That's another one.
Mahomes did Mahomes. Kyle, says Dave Barclay. Thank you.
Fair.
Okay, let's move on. Enough. We do that every time I do a show. Sorry, Kyle. Okay, let's talk about things that we're really interested in learning at training camp this year. Because you always learn something. You're going to be there watching for yourself. What are you interested in learning?
Man, I think there's a lot to take away from this year's training camp. And normally it's like the quarterback thing that takes the center stage for sure. This year we don't have that, but there is a lot of things that we need to know about this team. You want to go back and forth, or do you want me to go off like the 10 things that I think are interesting this year?
Well, we can go back and forth.
Okay. So I'll go with the first one. First one, top of my mind, is D-line depth. What does it look like? Who's going to start? What's the rotations? And how deep is the defensive line? I think when this team has been at its best, it's been when the defensive line has been dominant and also had a great rotation of players. That's one thing that Kocurek does throughout the game. It really doesn't matter who the names are. He's going to rotate his players in and out. They've got to have big time depth, and they have to be better than what they have trended to be as a unit over the last couple of years. So I'm curious to see what the D-line depth looks like, especially now that Armstead's gone and they've brought in a couple new players.
Okay, I'm going to stick with that. I love the idea of looking at the D-line depth. Training camp is great to get a good look, first up-close look at players who don't play very much. But also, like, I want to look at Trent Williams and Nick Bosa. Now, neither of those guys did anything last year. Bosa was gone. Yeah. Trent Williams decided not to practice. If Bosa's back, will Trent Williams decide, like, will you practice once, man? Like, because it'll make you better. Forget you. You're the best, all right? You're the best. It'll make Bosa better. And you guys used to do that. When Bosa was younger, when Trent Williams was younger, they would do at least a couple of days of one-on-one drills, and they didn't do it that much, but it definitely made Bosa better. I've never seen Bosa win against Trent Williams. After every time that he loses, he gives Trent a little pat in the helmet, like, thank you. Because he appreciates, who else is going to give Bosa that look? Bosa is the main reason that defense fell off. Like, they can blame Steve Wilks, but when you get a guy who goes from defensive player of the year to not even all pro and has like half the sacks, that's the difference. So I'd like to see those two suited up once or twice, man, for the team.
Yeah, that would actually be a lot of fun. We didn't get that at all. You're right, because Bosa wasn't there, and then Trent hardly does practice, which is fine. I mean, he's, you know, 35, 36. We know how good you are. Understood.
Yeah. But still, I mean, it's about your teammates. And it's the same thing we were talking about with tipping plays, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever, man. It doesn't hurt you individually, but it's not helping the right tackle. It's not helping the rest of the offensive line pick up the unblocked blitzer off the other side. I mean, these are things that you are a great individual player, man, but you're a captain also. So it'd be nice if you just practice once.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, if we want to stick with the O-line, I think that's interesting as well. What does the rotation look like there? Yep. Is there a true competition? Because to me, really, center all the way over to right tackle, I think all those positions should be up for grabs, depending on who performs the best. I mean, Feliciano can play right guard, center. You just drafted Pooney. What are the options? I mean, there's like three or four options you can go with at center. I mean, there's so many different rotations. Burford's there. Brindell has knee tendonitis. I mean, I don't know. I just think that should all be open for competition, center to right tackle, and may the best man win.
I love that we didn't go straight to this, but frankly, Vic, this is the number one story until it's not. BA watch.
Oh, for sure.
It's self-explanatory. We don't have to belabor because we've been talking about him the whole time, but like every day, is he here? Was he in meetings? Is he showing up? Has he shown up? Is he going to show up? Has anyone talked to him? What is his state of mind? How are his emotions? Mm-hmm. How does he feel? All that stuff, which sucks. It's not what I want to cover. It's not what the team wants to be covered, but that's the news. I mean, really, like nothing that happens in practice is news. It's inside football stuff that fans love to know, but Brandon Ayuk wasn't there again today. That's the news. So, BA watch.
No, that's not a very interested good point. In it,
but that's what I have to talk about. We have to talk about it.
No, it's a very good point. And then on the flip side of that is the rookie wide receivers, Pearsall and Cowing. I mean, if BA is not going to be there, can one of these guys step up? Now we're going to see them against number one corners, Tre'Davious Ward, D'Amador Lenore. What does it look like then? And are they showing improvement? Even if it doesn't look great early, that's okay. But you want to see them show that improvement day in and day out. I don't care what Pearsall does against Ambry Thomas or Luter or whoever that isn't a starter on this team. Let me see him in those reps against the number one corners, and then I'll decide what I'm seeing. And so I think those matchups are going to be interesting as well.
Talking about Pearsall, I mean, one, obviously, how good is he going to be on a day-to-day basis? But first, can he stay healthy? Is he? No. He's hurt. He's hurt now. So will he be hurt in a week? If so, what's the injury? Because they'll have to say, they'll give, once they start practicing, they'll give daily injury reports. So what's the deal? Can he play? When's he coming back? And then if Brandon comes back, what kind of shape is he in? Is he in football shape? I'm sure he's in like, you know, 4% body fat shape, but like, is he in football shape? Does he pull a hamstring the first week? Is he the same route runner he was last year? Because we all thought
last year
Nick Bosa missing all the training camp would be, who cared? Ha ha ha. He's in great shape. No, it mattered. It absolutely affected his play. And then he talked about it. So what's up with Brandon?
Yeah, it doesn't matter how good you are, how hard of a worker you are. It does impact you. I mean, I don't think there's many people across the NFL that work harder than Bosa in the offseason. They always talk about how he's a consummate pro and he's working his butt off. Everybody thought if there's anybody that can avoid having a letdown after missing all of camp, it would be somebody like Bosa. And turns out that's not the case. I mean, everybody needs those reps. And so, yeah, I am curious to see when he comes back, what it looks like. You know, and here's the other thing too. It's a story if he's there and he's not practicing. Like, does he do the hold in? Does he do the hold out? I'll say this, BA, you requesting a trade week prior to veterans arriving and the day that essentially rookie camp started, I think you can't be there in person. You can't do the hold in. You certainly can't practice. Like, you can't be taken seriously if that's the route you're going to take and then you're just there. You either requesting a trade or you're not. You know what I mean? So I'm curious to see how he plays it.
I think Deebo Samuel's an underrated person to watch this year. Sort of the forgotten guy. You're looking at younger guys, but like, Brandon is upset and he wants more from the 49ers. And he essentially wants to push Deebo off the team because there's not enough money for both of them. So Deebo's response has been not to get upset, not to pout, to show up to OTAs and minicamp, and to actually practice. So it seems to me like Deebo is approaching this year like it's a contract year for him. Like, I know he's under contract for two more years, but this could be it. He could be cut. Who knows? He could be freaking cut next year on the open market negotiating for another contract. So good to put your best foot forward and not just be in your best shape and practice hard every day, but like lead and talk and really drive the freaking point home that you're so much better and more professional and more essential to the team than Brandon, since he wanted to take it there. I'm curious to see about Debo because it seems like that's how he's moving this year.
Yeah, he definitely seems to be moving a little bit differently, and it's good to see. I think another thing that's interesting, Talanoa Funga. I mean, he's the first guy out every single day in practice, right? Well, almost every day. Jair Brown kind of did it a few times last year, but he really is that first guy in, last guy out mentality coming off of a major injury. But he's also been an all-pro and was just two short years ago. We saw the run defense at times last year really struggle. How much of that was because he wasn't there? Can he overcome a major injury and be the same player he was 2 years ago? He has a lot on the line. I mean, he's going to be a free agent also at the end of the year. He's trying to get paid. I'm curious to see what his tone is, what his demeanor is, how he looks athletically. There were times last year where he shut down almost every tight end he went against in one-on-ones. I'm curious to see if he still has that same ability.
That's a really good one. Also, Nick Sorensen watched to me. He's going to talk.
Oh, good point.
I mean, like, it's not just like what's his demeanor in practice, but it's like, how do you comport yourself in these press conferences, man? Like, what is your gravitas, energy, all of that? Because I don't know, man. I mean, it seems like if it doesn't go so well early on, he could get fired at the bye week. Remember last year when the Niners were clearly upset with Steve Wilks at the bye week and all they could do was change where he called plays? I think if the Niners feel similarly about Nick Sorensen at the bye week, they're not going to change. They're not going to move him from the sideline to the. They're going to move him out of the building, and Brandon Staley will replace him. So he doesn't have a whole lot of time to prove himself. Is he going to create a good first impression? Some days I feel like he can. Some days I feel like, who is this guy? Other days I'm like, no, he's a former player. He's got some energy. He seems pretty authentic. I'm open-minded.
Yeah, it's really tough to gauge coaches. I remember last year, Wilks was super energetic in practices. I mean, I know that you said it's more like press conferences and what's his demeanor there, but from a practice standpoint and being hands-on, I mean, I don't think anybody was more hands-on than Wilks. He was constantly coaching, constantly trying to work with the players and get them to be better, but that didn't necessarily translate or parlay into the season. You would think that he's getting in there with the players, like that would mean something, but clearly it meant nothing. So
also Staley is interesting. Like, yeah. Staley's almost more interesting than Sorensen if you think about it, because Sorensen is like who the Niners want you to look at. They're like, this is our guy. Look at the defensive coordinator. But there's this other guy behind the curtain that they don't really want you to talk about. But when you watch practice, you'll be there. It's like, okay, so what's Sorensen doing and what's Staley doing? Is there really a difference? Yeah. When I was watching in OTAs and minicamp, I would see Sorensen had the walkie-talkie calling plays, and he was behind the offense next to Kyle.
Okay. Yeah.
Staley was on the sideline interacting with each player one-on-one. So obviously one guy's the play caller, but the other guy has a lot of one-on-one contact with the players. Maybe more. So that's interesting. Like, what does Staley actually do that the Niners don't want us to know that he does? Because they're never going to talk about it.
No, they're definitely not. I am curious to see how that plays out. I think for me, the last thing that I'm really looking forward to is they say they want to get CMC some rest this year. They seem to also have some pretty capable backs last year that they weren't willing to do that with. Couple of those names are returning. We obviously have Mason and we have Elijah Mitchell, but they've brought in two rookies. What does it look like behind CMC? Who can step up and kind of take over that number two spot? And then who's cut? That's going to be interesting for me as well.
I like that. Also, finally, the quarterback. Like, I don't think Brock has a ton to prove in camp. Like, he objectively had a bad camp last year and it didn't matter at all. It didn't. Yeah. He had a great year. So if he goes out and has another bad camp, it won't necessarily be big news or indicative of anything. But the backup quarterbacks, Dobbs, Brandon Allen, and Mordecai, is one of them good? Because what if Brock Purdy, I mean, quarterbacks get hurt all the time. Most starting quarterbacks get hurt, not just on the 49ers. So if he ends up missing six games, are the Niners okay? I don't know. I mean, from what I saw in Josh Dobbs and OTAs and minicamp, he didn't look great in practice. Maybe he's a gamer. But once the pass is more than 5 yards down the field, like he's scattershot. And Brandon Allen, I'm sorry, like, maybe I'm just being dismissive because he's 32, but we're going to need to see if there's because last year they talked so much about how important it was to have backup quarterbacks, because in 2022, they went through literally four of them. Now it's like, well, we haven't had an injury in 12 months, so that's not an issue anymore. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because you could have had Trey Lance. I hate to bring him up all the time, but like, you could have had Trey Lance and you decided to trade him for a fourth round pick who is now Malik Mustafa. So, is it better to have Malik Mustafa and Josh Dobbs and Brandon Allen, or we'll see?
Well, first of all, if Brock Purdy's going to miss six games, then hopefully Ryan Tannehill's still a free agent. I think he's available. I would probably be reaching out to Ryan Tannehill very, very quickly. Yeah. I think he's a more capable player than all of them, at least has shown to be at some point. So that's what I would probably be doing. But yeah, I mean, it does matter. It does matter to a certain extent. It probably won't get a ton of coverage, but it will be talked about. And if they all look awful, that's not good.
No, not good at all. Okay, so I think we've done that. Let's end with this. Why do you think training camp reports are important?
Man, what's interesting about this is I was talking with coach on the phone a couple weeks ago, and he's going to training camp for the first time, and he's like, you know, what did you get from training camp last year? And he asked me that a couple months ago, actually. And at first I told him, I was like, not really much, you know, it's fun to be there and whatever else, but you don't really learn a lot. And then he asked me again a couple weeks ago when we were talking, and I had tons of answers for him. I really sat down and thought about it, man. There was a lot to glean from last year. Like, if you really just look at how the season played out and then what happened in camp, I'll give you some examples. I think, you know, a lot of people were frustrated with Mason not getting more touches. And I agree with that. But Mason was clearly lost in his offensive assignments when he was playing receiver and his blocking assignments. That showed up all training camp when I was there, right? It was only five practices, but that's what I saw. And I talked about that on my shows. Well, he also couldn't get on the field, it seemed like, last year for big chunks. And I think that played out. IU absolutely dominated last year. Guess what? Best year. He was dominant during the regular season. And you know another one, and it was short-lived, but do you remember when Taco Charlton came in and was clearly the best pass rusher on the team? That told us two things, really, in hindsight. It told us, first of all, the right tackle is awful. And the other thing that it told us is, outside of Bosa, who the hell can get after this quarterback? Because
Not Drake Jackson.
Exactly. So you had guys like Luter, Womack, Drake Jackson, Latu, Kalia Davis, TDP. They didn't do squat. We all hoped they could do something, and none of them were a factor last year. We knew that really early on if we looked at it. So there's a lot to glean from training camp. And if we really pay attention closely and kind of map this through the season, I think there will be some callbacks week five, week six, week seven, where we're like, man, we should have seen this coming. It was all over training camp and we just really didn't forecast it well.
Also, I think we've gotten to the point where there is so much competition among people who create training camp reports that they've gotten pretty good. You got to step your game up and have all kind of details, because if you don't, the next guy will. And if your details are wrong, the other seven will be right and you'll stand out. So I think the reader, if they're really interested and they want to read seven reports and watch four shows, you'll have a really good sense of what happened at practice. And if you value practice, it might say what's going to happen in the season.
Yeah, and I think that's the other thing too, and that's why I would encourage people to watch all of the content creators if they can stomach it all, because everybody's watching different things. It's very different. You know, when you're watching on TV, you get a replay. You can rewind. You can do all these things. But when you're watching it live, you get it once, and there is no jumbo screen that's showing the replay. Right? And so everybody's looking at different things and capturing different things. And so you may get a perspective from me where Grant was watching something completely different on that play. And he's like, well, listen, you know, on that play, I saw this. And it's like, well, okay, well, let's put the pieces of the puzzle together. And now it's almost like we're bringing you as close as we can to the practice. I think that's very important.
Absolutely. And be honest, like if you guys could watch practice live streamed every day, you would. Absolutely. You guys are watching Jesse and me on a Wednesday night talk about the 49ers in July. Okay. You guys are super fans. You would absolutely watch every single minute, every single day. And they won't let you for some stupid reason. The NBA, they broadcast Summer League. NFL will eventually. They haven't figured it out yet. So, yeah, you're going to listen to these reports and read them and figure out the inconsistencies. And Grant said it was in the, and you said it was. Yeah, you're going to figure it out. So I think it's a good thing. I think it's about time that these beat writers figured out, like, this is what your audience wants. Work a little harder at the practice report and not just the interviews. Because, we know the players are super excited.
In the best shape of their life.
Yeah.
All the things.
I want to go back to the other topic real quick and then we'll finish out with the super chats. But things were interesting in training camp. Another one occurred to me, just popped in my head out of nowhere. Okay. Linebacker position. Okay.
So I had it written down. Greenlaw filling. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it is.
So Fred Warner, great player, right? But Dre Greenlaw goes down the Super Bowl and all of a sudden Oren Burke slides into that spot next to Fred Warner and the Niners defense can't stop anything. And a lot of people feel that's the difference in the Super Bowl. If Greenlaw had been healthy, the Niners would have won, but he went down and the Chiefs just destroyed Oren Burks. Okay, Oren Burks is gone, and now in his place is Devondre Campbell. Is that an upgrade? Or is he just the next guy who's going to get torched and covered? Like, I don't know. The Packers straight up cut him. They're like, thanks, man. Thanks for everything. We're better off without you. So, or is it D. Winters? Is it someone we don't know, Jalen Graham, who steps up? Because I think it's really important. It was important in the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah, it was extremely important. And, you know, we'll see what Devondre Campbell ends up being. But he was talking the same way on the internet this time last year that he is this year, where it's like, oh, finally the fresh start that I need. And he was praising the Green Bay Packers last year, like, oh, thank God I'm here. Like, these guys are great. Like, finally I get to get back to my normal self. And then it's a year later, it's like, oh, it was awful there. Finally, I get a chance with the 49ers. Like, well, maybe you're just washed. That's a possibility. I'm not saying he is, but that could be true, and we'll find out.
Yeah. Last thing about why training camp reports are important. This is me on my soapbox a little bit. I've been doing these since 2011. I take them very seriously, and I like that people do them, but I think the difference between a good training camp report and a bad training camp report is, this is just me being my English major self, you need to show and not tell. So if you say, like, Ricky Pearsall was great today, that's not good enough. It's a start.
Yeah. Why was he great? Yeah.
Why? Like, and don't you show as much as you can. He was lined up here. He went against this guy. He ran this route. He made this play. Like, use your descriptive words, verbs, you know, like real action words, as best as you can. Because if you're just giving summarization and opinions, then, I mean, you're basically asking viewers or readers to trust you. And who the hell do you think you are, man? Like, why don't you just display the raw data and then you can convey your judgments. Obviously, I do. But give the readers enough raw material that they can make their own judgments to and feel like they're there. Because that's ultimately what they want, not your summarization.
No, I think that's extremely important. And I'm glad that my first year at training camp was during a competition at quarterback, because you had to be super detailed. There was a day, I remember last year, Sam Darnold went something like 9 for 11 or 11 for 13, and I gave him a C. And it's like, if you just say that out loud, it's like, how the hell are you going to give this guy a C? Well, let me break it down for you. Here's every single throw he made.
Hell yeah.
None of them traveled more than 5 yards. Let's start there. That's not impressive.
Honestly, as a viewer, as a reader, have you ever come away from a practice report and said, boy, I wish there was less detail in this report?
No, never.
No, absolutely not. Never. You're always like, well, who was he playing? Could you tell me? And what about? And it's so hard because there's all these different people and there's so many things to look at that really, if you put all 15 of us together, you might get 50% of the picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot that is missed for sure.
Not cool to pay BA because we passed the less, but Brock. Yeah, I do think that all the arguments, thank you, Kyle Levy, that the Niners use against paying BA would actually apply to the argument against paying Brock, but I don't know if they'll be consistent with that one. Mm. Fish and Chip says you could throw some spirals with Kyle Shanahan at camp. Yeah, let's just play catch, man, like brothers. Flav says, do you guys think BA has ever really wanted to be here? I feel like he's never really wanted to be here or like Kyle. And if a deal doesn't get done, it's more about that than the money. I do think he wanted to play for the Packers and Aaron Rodgers and was kind of disappointed when the Niners leapfrogged him, maybe. I don't think he was juiced to play with Jimmy Garoppolo at any point.
Yeah, he was not he definitely showed that at times. Yeah. I don't know. I think he's enjoyed his time here for the most part. I think it's been rocky. It's been a little up and down. I wouldn't say he's never enjoyed it, but I don't think that it's like one of those things where he feels like he has to be here either. Some players are like, oh God, you know, I'm a Niner for life. Like, please let me retire in this uniform. George Kittle's probably one of them. And I don't get that from BA at all.
Saturnine90 says smooth jazz implies the existence of rough jazz. That's very existential. But I would have to say that rough jazz exists to my untrained ears. A lot of times avant-garde John Coltrane stuff, I'm like, what? Would you just stop playing random notes for a second? Like, ow, that hurts. John, you're rough a genius. Jazz. Sorry, Saturnine. Lawless Light says this move would be far from a Randy Moss moves.
Yeah, yeah. If you get Davante Adams, absolutely. Yes.
All right, it's 7:02. The show is officially over, but make sure you follow Last Second Sports. He's got almost 23,000 subscribers. He's doing a great job. It's a hell of a show. They do cold opens all the time over there. I didn't even know. Follow me and subscribe to me as well. I'll be back tomorrow with the coach. Sayonara, everyone.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.